This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawera Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, and I am joined from Whakatane by Mawera Karatai. Kia ora, Mawera.
Sam, how's it going?
It's going very well indeed. Did you notice that time I didn't say from Karatane? I nearly did.
But I actually wish I was from Karatane because it's a beautiful place and I might end up living there.
That would be fabulous. My parents lived there for a while. It was a great place to be.
I think I'd be happy there. Let's work towards that.
So, third, I think, of our series of Coming Up for Air, who are we introducing today?
It is my great pleasure to introduce the very amazing Kate Parker. Kia ora, Kate. Thank you for joining us today.
Kia ora. Thank you.
Kia ora, Kate. Where are you, Kate?
Hawke's Bay.
Hawke's Bay. Where did you grow up?
Grew up in Hawke's Bay and have sort of gone away and come back. My whole family's actually come back home, so it's really nice having lots of family around.
What was it like growing up there?
It was good. Good childhood. Played lots of sport. Had good, friends and family around. It's a pretty easy lifestyle. Probably gotten a little bit faster now, but it's still got really good schooling and that sort of thing. So yeah, happy days, nice and sunny.
And what did you want to be when you grew up?
Number one in the world at tennis. That sort of failed on me at 21, but I was just very driven with playing sports. I went played tennis through to 18 in New Zealand, and then went to the States on a tennis scholarship, and then realised I was with a lot more bigger fish in the sea and sort of started focusing on uni sort of after that, really, and got my degree. And then, so I did 3 years in the States and then came back to Auckland and started my career there. Yeah. So, interesting.
So other than tennis, what did you train as?
So I did my degree in accountancy, and then I just did my undergrad in accountancy and then came back to Auckland and did my chartered accountancy, which took about another 3.5-4 years. And then have sort of moved on now, being in sort of practice for 10 years working in industry. I started at EY and was there for 5 years doing audit and consultancy, and then went out into industry and have sort of been there since. And now I'm working for a horticulture tomato exports, which is an exporter based in Hawke's Bay.
So you're currently doing a master's in sustainable practice or business or something like that, it's called.
Yeah.
What got you there?
When I had my first child, Lucy, I had 10 months off work. And I just sort of you have more time to think, and I just sort of started to see the impact that we were having on the environment. And so it kind of became a passion there. And when you're raising children, you have a lot of waste as well. So it was just kind of quite at your forefront. And then, yeah, when I went back to work, it was sort of always playing on my mind that I wanted to, if I was going to do more study, I wanted it to be in that area. And so I sort of just took the plunge last year because my partner's still studying and working as well. So we just sort of decided this would be the last time to study. And it's just as a in finance, there's a need now to really focus on the environment and any decision that you make, and there's a need for that, and it's natural I think for finance to be a part of that decision, because you know a CFO has a lot of responsibility to make sure that the business is steered in the right direction. And so I just think that it's a nice combination for me to have both, and our company's really starting to focus on sustainability and recording their emissions and reducing those emissions as well. So I think it's a good time for me to upskill and learn about this.
Do you see yourself as making a transition to sustainability, sustainable practice, or is it something that you were really doing before in accountancy and finance?
Do you mean would I transition into a sustainability role?
Yeah, I'm just wondering how you see the progression in your career. Are you adding sustainability to finance, or is it something that is in conflict and so you've got to sort of make a pivot away? Is it something that was there already? How are you seeing that relationship?
At the moment, to sort of gain experience, I'm seeing it as something that I'd like to do alongside my finance. So I'm definitely doing that at the moment. In the future, like obviously I get really excited about sustainability, so that's what is becoming like my why, whereas it used to sort of be tennis. So I think in the future it will be, like in the near future, I mean kind of like the next couple of years, I'd like to have more of a full-time role in sustainability. But I think where things are at the moment, just with my career, I think that I'm just trying to do it alongside. Because I guess there's got to be a need for me to be in a role as well. Like someone's got to sort of take, you know, based on your current experience, like, whereas at the moment I feel like I'm gaining quite a lot of experience, so it'll probably take me another couple of years to kind of either to do something different. Yeah.
When you were studying accountancy and applying that in finance, was sustainability a thing? Like, is it integrated into the theories and practices of accounting as you were taught?
No, it was never. So it was literally, as everyone always talks about, you had three different product lines and you wanted to know what one to go for. It was literally based on profit. So what was the most profitable? And then you'd look at, there was never none of my courses that I recall ever taking mentioned sustainability. It wasn't discussed. And that was 2013 I finished my degree, so from 2010 to 2013, and then through my CA it was never mentioned, whereas they've now, if you're doing your chartered accountancy, there's now a module on sustainability, so that's really quite good to see as well. I think if you're doing your degree, it would be part of it. It would have to be, yeah.
But the existing chartered accountants don't have to go back and re-add that to their...
No, they don't. But there's CPD hours which you have to do, and there's CPD courses that are in sustainability, so you can choose to use your time during that. They also invite you to events that teach you how to do your emissions, because, ultimately, I guess your... Scope 1, 2, and 3, like all that data that you need is kind of sitting on supplier invoices. So the best team to deal with that would be finance, really, because those invoices are coming across their desk. So why not capture it at that point in time?
If you could wave a magic wand and change accountancy to be sustainable accountancy, would there be a way of like changing accountancy to make it sustainable?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that any investment that finance would look at would be, so any future, so say, yeah, like any future investment or any current investments that kind of need a revamp or whatever, you would want to incorporate sustainability through there. But yeah, like for me, it seems like such an easy thing that you would only look at sustainability options now. But whether people are doing that or not in their day-to-day, I still don't think that they would be 100% of the time. It depends, I guess, on what how much knowledge you're prepared to take on without going to study like I am. Like, how much upskilling are you doing while you're working in industry?
Let's take your music track, Mitch James, Mama and Me. Why this one?
Well, it just came out and I really like the song. It's kind of the intro is a little bit kind of, you know, it relates to my podcast. But then it kind of, yeah, just the start kind of does when you have a baby. It's like a very special moment.
You had a life before you even thought of mine. Who were you then? Did you have lots of friends? And what car did you drive? When you met Dad, do you think of the life you might have? And on your wedding day, did you plan out the names of the kids that you'd have? From the very first moment I looked in your eyes, you told me about love as you stared into mine. You're holding the hands of the new little life that you made. You brought me back home and I started to cry. You held me in close and sung sweet lullabies. When I started running, I knew I was running to you. The start of the story of everything I'll ever be. My mama and me. Time passing by, 17 blink of an eye. We're fighting again, so I'm smoking with friends in the car parked outside. Remember the day the cops drove me back to your place and said, is this your son? Do you know what he's done? Thank God for your grace. But I shook off your hand when you tried to hold it. Said, Mom, I'm a man, can't you leave me alone? And when I look back, I still see the pain on your face. All my mistakes can't have been easy to hold all the space for hurting and healing. So many reasons for you not to love me the same. How lucky am I that nothing could come in between my mama and me. Starts to go, I'll tell you the stories that you always told. You know I love you as I hold your hand in the dark. I'll sing you to sleep, the one who gave me air to breathe. My mama and me.
Bubble sprite of the forest of Orokonui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, ngā mihi aroha nui kia koutou, ko tahu au. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars and your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day, who you are. A triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very challenging, and it's so important that we give ourselves and each other the time, the space, the care, the compassion, the understanding, the empathy, the sympathy, in order to recover, because for all of us, we had a great shock to our system on all levels when that world that we knew changed. And I think for all of us now, we're finding ways to reintegrate into a changed world, a new world. We've had a global experience, which many would hope could be a leveler. Many would hope could be a revolutionary shared experience. And I know for many people, they're choosing to live their lives differently now. And this is a wonderful thing about this show. And of course, being part of this show is a huge pleasure and privilege to have this time with you all. So a huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me. Very, very beautiful to share our stories of transformation and transmutation when we're in challenging times. And of course, as a species, this is something that we have done for hundreds of thousands of years, coming together and sharing our stories, coming together and sharing our experiences, learning from one another. And this has enabled us to create the whole human world, working together, sharing ideas, enabling different strengths to come forward within a community so that new things can be brought into the world. And of course, I'm always reminded whenever I am inside and I'm looking at the fruits of this great process of communication that's been taking place for so long, that everything began as an idea, that everything began as an imagining in someone's mind. Some of us in our minds, we can visualize exactly every detail of what we're envisioning. Some of us, it's more of a feeling, it's more of a non-visual imagining. Some of us can play music or recall conversations in our mind. Every mind is different. And so I really hope for you, you're having the opportunity to really enjoy the privacy and the security that your own mind offers you. No one else, of course, can enter that space. No one else, of course, can know what you are thinking, what you are imagining, what you are visualizing, what you are creating, unless you choose to share it. And I always encourage my beautiful ākonga that visit me at Orokonui to share their ideas, because I say, you know, look at the fence of defense. And that started as an idea, and lots of people had to work together to make it happen, and it saved trillions of lives protecting the forest at Orokonui. So please share your ideas. But also a good reminder that we always have that space in our own mind to visualize, to bring us comfort, to envision the lives, the future that we wish to create for ourselves. And what a wonderful pleasure that is. And I'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Kate Parker.
Kate, your podcast is actually quite different from your day-to-day practice. So what is it that you would like the listeners to know before they hear your podcast?
I think my podcast is just quite timely, where both, you know, all people are really working quite hard, and when they have a baby, that's a big decision, and so you're dedicating so much life to your job and stuff, so it'd just be nice to have open conversations with your firm around how they can support you during this time. And I just think Stephanie Powell was very amazing, like her business Crayon, and so it was just, I just wanted to share that knowledge that I had learned, so that people are aware of the resources that they have available, and just to sort of some tips on how you can have these discussions with your organisations to better support you.
Hi, my name is Kate Parker, and I'm studying for my Master of Sustainable Business. This podcast is for my MANT 447 class at Otago University. The purpose of this podcast is to discuss a contemporary issue in sustainability. The topic I'm interested in discussing today is maternity leave in New Zealand. Maternity leave across New Zealand varies depending on the organisation the employee works for. It is very complicated, and it's important that you as an individual or as part of your family understand what is available. The base or minimum offer is provided by the New Zealand government. The statutory entitlement is for primary carers to receive up to $712.17 before tax for 26 weeks if working full-time for at least 6 months. There are also unpaid parental leave benefits depending on the different eligibility criteria, such as whether you have been working for 12 months, 6 months, or self-employed before going on maternity leave. Partners are entitled to 2 weeks unpaid leave if working for a year and 1 week unpaid leave if working for 6 months. Organisations across New Zealand are realising women need to be supported during their childbearing years. Retaining staff is crucial for New Zealand organisations, and I believe that helping women through this period of their life will retain them in the future. This leads me to my interview today. Welcome, Stephanie Powell, the founder of Crayon. I'm going to talk with Stephanie today about Crayon and how it got started. The topic of maternity leave is often discussed amongst my friends as we work out what we could potentially ask our employers. Most of us decide not to bother asking or ask for something inadequate. Crayon is working on building a better support system for parental leave in New Zealand. Their resources are user-friendly and great to facilitate the steps that need to occur to ensure women and new families are financially prepared for parenthood. Thanks, Stephanie, for agreeing to do this podcast. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Kate.
I'm interested in getting to know a little bit about you. I think it takes great courage to start a new company, let alone tackle the maternity leave in New Zealand. Where did you grow up? What university did you go to? And what experience did you have prior to starting Crayon?
So I'm actually an Aussie transplant. I grew up in Sydney. That's where I studied. I did my undergrad at the University of New South Wales with a Bachelor of Commerce. And then I went into the world of investment banking. So I started on the trading floor after I graduated and worked there for 4 years on the equity derivatives team at UBS. And then I decided to do some further study. So I did an MBA, so a Master of Business Administration at Wharton, and a Master of Public Administration at Harvard. In between all that, I met and married a Kiwi, which is how I ended up in New Zealand. I moved here in 2016. I joined Vend, a software company here, and had a blast in strategic and operational roles. And then I welcomed my first child in 2019. I took a year of parental leave, and I'd been kicking some ideas around in my head for some time, and I decided at that point to take the plunge.
Wow, that's a really interesting story. Thanks for sharing. Let's talk about Crayon now. So How did Crayon come about? When did the idea start for you? Like, I know you just mentioned around when you were at Vend and having your first child. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
So actually there's a predecessor idea, you would call it, before Crayon, and I worked on that for about a year and a half. It was around women and investing. It's an area I had worked in at UBS, and it's an area I find very interesting. But ultimately, when I went on print to leave the second time around in July 2021, I decided to throw that idea in the bin and start again. So I've been working on Crayon since, I guess you'd call it, early 2022, so coming up to about 2 years now. And I guess the observation from me is that often when it comes to personal finances, people don't usually take action until there's something that happens in their life. They get married, or they have a child, or they split from their partner, or they lose a loved one, or there's something in your personal life that really forces you to reckon with your finances. I think most of us, myself included, don't wake up and say, today's the day, I'm just randomly going to get it sorted. There usually is something in our life that happens that kind of encourages us to engage with our finances, whether we like it or not. And for me, having a child was one of those moments. I know a lot about finance. I studied finance. I worked in finance. I'm certainly financially literate. But I found that when I had my first daughter 5 years ago now, there were a lot of financial surprises I hadn't planned for. It wasn't something people talked about. You know, when you're expecting, people talk about what baby gear you need or maybe what your parental leave plans are, but no one really talks to you about money. In fact, we don't like talking about money in general, let alone in a baby planning context. So I figured I probably wasn't the only one who got caught out, and I was lucky, you know, we were okay. We're in a position that it turned out fine. But had I known what I know today, I would have made really different choices in the lead up to my parental leave. And so my hope is that the work that we do helps other people make better decisions along the way.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. I know from my experience as well, I've got one child, and when I found out I was pregnant, I kind of didn't really, like, also got a finance background, but I just sort of expected, oh, you know, I'll just take a year out. It'll cost me this much out of my savings, and I'm prepared to do that. Whereas I have that plan, and I know that there's more options available now to discuss, whereas I feel like you know how much everything costs, so you want to be a lot more prepared going round two. That's for sure. Well, that's cool.
Your point about second child is sometimes, you know, for your first child, you potentially had some time to save for it. If you have children relatively quickly, you might have drawn down on your savings the first time around, but not had enough time to replenish it for, you know, the second or third, etc.
Yes, yeah, no, that's a very good point. Very true. So where does the name Crayon come from?
So I registered Crayon back in 2020 when I was working on the other idea, and the reason I picked it is that it's fun, it's nostalgic, and I figured if the business changed, it would still probably be appropriate. You know, it's not Crayon Finance, it's just Crayon. And I think for me, it harks back to childhood, and, you know, I knew I wanted to be in the finance space, and finance can be, frankly, quite dry, boring. It's a bit of a life admin chore, I think, for a lot of people, and so I wanted something playful, and so that's, you know, Crayon was available, and so I ran with that.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, I really like the name.
Thank you.
Great. Now that we've learned a little bit about yourself and Crayon, I'm just going to move on to some of the key facts in New Zealand around maternity leave and the gender pay gap. So there's recent data from Te Ara Ahanga Ora, the Retirement Commission, that show a 36% gap between the amount men and women are putting into KiwiSaver each year. What factors do you think contribute to this?
Yeah, so it's a difference of 36% in contributions, and then some research that they published last year showed that the average KiwiSaver balance for women is 25% lower than men. So there's a difference between what we put in but also what it's worth, and that gap widens as we get older. So there are a few reasons for this. One is the pay gap. So on average, women in New Zealand earn less than men, and that's for a couple of reasons. One of that is sometimes at the industries where women have higher representation, think about like teaching and nursing, etc., they tend to be lower paid industries. The second is that there are fewer women in more senior management, which obviously generally translates to higher earnings, you know, the higher you rise in an organization. So one of the key drivers is the gender pay gap. The second is that women tend to take more time out of the paid workforce. So parental leave is a good example, but also a number of people returning from parental leave might go back part-time or take extended time out of the paid workforce. So that also is a contributing factor to the contributions gap.
Wow. What you've talked about, that to me seems like, yeah, like a really big issue with the pay gap, and that women are taking more time to have children, and it's of no, you know, women are the ones that carry the baby for 9 months, and it's only natural, you know, that they want to be at home for, you know, quite a bit of time before returning to work. So I guess there needs to be support systems in place to allow them to have time with their children, but not, I guess, have all this financial stress when they are on maternity leave and then when they return. So I'd like to sort of discuss now social structures and how the Nordic countries have addressed gender equality. One journal article from Lynn 2021 talks about addressing gender equality in the labour market. They talk about access to subsidised childcare, equally shared parental leave and paid parental leave. And so I did a bit more research and looked at the Nordic Cooperation website, and in Sweden, the parental leave over there is 480 days for one child, and 390 of those days is paid based on your normal income, and the remaining 90 days is paid at the minimum level. And so there's also, you know, adjustments if you're a sole, you've got sole custody of the child, or if there's two parents, you can actually share that with your partner. Can you please talk about what you see occurring in New Zealand?
Sure. So the Nordics certainly are leading the way when it comes to parental leave. There are also a number of Asian countries with very generous provisions because they have very low birth rates and they're trying to boost it. In New Zealand, the statutory entitlements are very different to what you just outlined. You're entitled to up to 26 weeks of pay, and it replaces your income to a cap of $712.17 per week before tax. So it's generally about $585 after tax, and that amount is revised each year. And then for a partner, New Zealand is one of three developed countries with no paid parental leave reserved for partners. So we're right at the bottom of the OECD table. It's worth noting that in New Zealand, that unpaid partners leave provision utilization rate is about 4%. That's a stat published by MIMBY. So the reality is a lot of families cannot survive with a primary carer receiving, let's call it 585 cash in hand, and a partner receiving nothing. That's just not really feasible for a lot of families.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting, particularly around like the men not getting any sort of time off as well, because I guess if women are meant to, you know, be in the workplace and sort of share that responsibility with your partner, you would kind of hope that in order to help balance that out, that the males should be entitled to sort of a similar sort of thing as well to kind of support that.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, that you mentioned the Nordics before, there's this really piece of interesting research out of Sweden that found that for every month a father takes off parental leave, the mother's earnings, when they measure it 4 years after the child's born, is 6.7% higher. That's for every month a father takes a parental leave. And obviously we're talking about a heterosexual couple here, but it's kind of amazing what you're touching on is allowing fathers or partners more broadly to take that time off has benefits actually for the other parent and their career and their earnings. There's an amazing body of research around how the bond between the father and the child is stronger even when they measure it 10 years down the track. There's lower levels of domestic violence. You know, there are actually a lot of benefits from having fathers take that caregiving role and did some time with your child in those early years.
What would you think would be a fair way to do maternity leave in New Zealand.
I think you touched on the point that we do need to enable partners to be present, and that means providing paid leave. We also probably need to look at what rate we're giving partners and primary carers. So you mentioned the Swedish example, you know, they pay most of that actually at the full wage. And when you look at other developed countries, the OECD kind of ranks countries on what they call average week pay. So we pay 26 weeks, but we pay it at such a low rate that the average week pay is about 13 weeks. That puts us in the bottom quartile amongst developed countries. So we're really lagging behind in that respect. So what are employers doing in the market? And we see a big range. We run the New Zealand parental leave register. We do get to see, we have about 260 odd organisations who've provided verified information on what they offer for parental leave. Some of them are really small organisations, some of the biggest names in New Zealand. And we're seeing a lot of them offer at most 6 months of full pay. Some of them have what we call gender-neutral equal pay parental leave. They don't distinguish between whether you're a primary carer or a partner. They just say you're a new parent. You get the same rights. Everybody needs support. So, and again, we can see that for up to 6 months, which I think is pretty amazing. We're also seeing employers recognise the KiwiSaver contribution gap that you mentioned, and some of them will make a contribution equivalent to what an employee would have received over 12 months from that employer, so that the employee is less behind. We're seeing employers do things like pay annual leave at its full rate. We're seeing employers offer more provisions around miscarriage, stillbirth, support when things don't go to plan. And then seeing employers do a lot around return to work. So often coming back to work can be quite tricky for the employee and the employer, and more of them are recognising that and putting processes and support in place. That might be coaching, or it might be, we have a return to work transition plan. We allow a graduated return to work. You can come back 2 days and 3 days and 4 days, et cetera, and build back up. You might want permanent flexible working, et cetera. And then the last one is around childcare. So we're the most expensive country in the world for childcare as a percentage of income. Two parents, each earning the average wage with two kids in full-time daycare, can expect to spend 37% of their income just on childcare. And so we are seeing a handful of employers recognise that as a barrier to returning to work and addressing that as well. So what I would say is that employers are seeing the importance of attracting and retaining valued staff, both primary carers and partners, and providing support across the whole journey rather than just paid leave.
So my last topic I'd really enjoy discussing with you is, what advice would you give parents or future parents wanting to get their employers on board with supporting them through arguably the most amazing time of their life? What would that discussion look like?
I think first, work out what your employer offers. Now, you may not want to flag directly to them that you're thinking about having a child, but you know, even well before you're pregnant or through the adoption process, etc., if it's on your radar, find out what your employer offers. That's not always as straightforward as it sounds. You know, you can obviously go on the register and see if your employer's on there. We cover one in every six employees in the country, but obviously that's a lot of folks who need to find out. Sometimes if an employer doesn't have a policy or they offer the statutory entitlements, there won't actually be a policy documentation anywhere for you to find. If you can't, then probably just work on the assumption that you're getting the statutory entitlements and start planning. What does that look like? Are you going to meet the requirements? You don't want to switch jobs and realize you haven't been there long enough to get the time off that you want with your child, right? That's a very real consideration. So make sure you're aware of what your rights and responsibilities are. We do a good job of outlining that on our website if you want a quick crash course. So that would be the first bit. I think the second part of your question is, well, how do you engage with your employer on this and have a conversation? And I think a lot of it is around, you know, understanding what other employers in your sector are doing. That's often a good starting point. You know, again, that's where the register can be really helpful of, you know, what are our peers doing for some inspiration. And then you've got to understand what situation your employer is in as well. It is a particularly tough economic time that we're in as we're recording this podcast. And so I think it is just having a conversation, emphasising that you want to come back. You know, a lot of employers do this as a strategy to retain talent. So you know, you have a conversation with them on, look, I'm committed to this job. I really love what I do here. I want to come back. It would, you know, mean a lot if we were able to support me through this period. Sometimes your employer might not even know what the statutory entitlements are, particularly if they haven't had anyone go on parental leave for quite some time. So I think it's about approaching that constructively and highlighting the benefits for both of you, not just you personally. But I think in general, employers do see it as a way of attracting and retaining staff. And with the representation of women becoming a bigger topic of conversation, we know that having a child is a big drop-off point career-wise. And so it's not surprising to see employers, you know, recognize that and do more there.
Yes, I agree with what you're saying. And I think it's about, you know, having confidence to talk to your employee and understand that you are valued, and that if they want to retain you, then having a conversation of how they can support you during this time would be really positive. And I think it's a win-win because, you know, recruiting is very time-consuming and costs a lot of money.
Absolutely. I think that's where you can see, you know, the Nordics see parental leave as an investment. I think some countries see parental leave as a cost, right? That's a very different framing. I think to your point, when you look at, okay, do we offer an employee potentially X number of weeks of parental leave? You've got to weigh that up against, if someone leaves, recruiter's fee, manager's time to do interviews, ramp up time, time that other people are covering that role, et cetera. That, you know, replacing a person, the estimated cost is between 50 to 200% of their salary. And so suddenly when you look at it in that respect, doing something a bit more for parental leave might not seem so much of a stretch.
I have one final question that all students completing the podcast assignment for Coming Up for Air, Contemporary Issues and Sustainability. The question is, if you could change one thing right now that would make the most significant positive difference for the future, what would that be?
Can I be greedy and have two?
Yeah.
I think for me it would be equal paid parental leave for both parents, and then, you know, subsidised, universal subsidised childcare.
Yeah.
That would make the biggest difference to the participation and empowerment and progress of all parents, actually, in the workplace.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I know with childcare as well, there was a subsidy that came out, but then all the childcares just put their prices up. So then you got no benefit from that. It was a little bit disheartening, I remember.
Before. Yeah, we were chatting to some friends in Sweden, and they've got three kids, and they're like, yeah, it's like $100 a week for their childcare, right? And this is good quality childcare. And again, even if you have great paid parental leave, but then if you had horrifically expensive childcare, you almost shoot yourself in the foot. You need both. You can't just have one without the other.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's true. Cool. Well, thanks so much, time. Thank you so much for your time, Stephanie. You're truly awesome and great leader to have for women. So thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Kate.
Kate, thank you very much for what I thought was a really beautiful way forward, really positive for families, and people need to hear that. There's a lot of good opportunities in there to support people in achieving their own personal aspirations and balancing their family life with their work life, which is just so important. What was your big takeaway from this?
I guess my big takeaway was just to plan and sort of have conversations early so that you can sort of map out for you what that journey looks like. Yeah, if you're planning on starting a family or having another baby. I just think that it's also a little bit challenging what we see in the New Zealand environment compared to other countries like Norway, and also Australia is really good with maternity leave as well. So it's just, in New Zealand, you know, we get less than minimum wage. So it's very hard. Like if you're a single parent or whatever, then you're struggling to get options if you want to have a family or a baby. So yeah, it just highlighted the issue that's in New Zealand, and but the things that have been doing to try and mitigate that or improve that situation. So it was just good to get that understanding.
Kate, the Crayon website has got some really great tools. What would people expect to find there?
The Crayon website, what it does is it publishes a lot of companies that have maternity leaves. So if you were to go on that website, you could get an indication of what other companies are offering, which is really, really cool. And you can also look at industry specific to kind of see what your competitors are doing so that you have something to go and talk to your employer about. They also have other toolkits around preparing financially. So if you are, whatever your situation, you can put that into the calculator and it will help work out how much savings or how much it's going to cost you to have a baby. And I think that's quite important with planning because you don't realise, you know, it adds up very quickly when you buy a cot or a pram and all the other things that you might need. So, yeah, it's just a very handy website to know of. And I wasn't aware of it until doing my research, so I just want to let people know that those resources are available.
Great.
Let's take our questions to end the show. Kate, what is the biggest success you've had in the last year or so?
Getting my daughter to sleep through the night.
That's very important.
It is.
Our daughter went to sleep during the night, but then she was like a maniac all day.
Yeah, mine's similar.
What is your superpower?
I have a high tolerance to stress.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
Like an environmental activist.
Anything you like.
Yes, I like to educate people. I don't think I like to, say you need to do this, you need to do that, but I like to give people the information to then hopefully make better choices. But that might become stronger.
Do you have a go-to definition of sustainability?
Oh, let's just stop extracting from the planet and not have our number one goal as being profit. Like, let's try and to be sustainable. I think the United Nations development goals are really good, so incorporating those in your business decisions. It's not really a definition, but those are the things that I'd like to see being included.
Do you think we're making much progress on that, moving from that number one goal as profit?
Yes and no. Like, I do think you do need some profit to be viable, but I think that how you make your decisions, like a lot of companies are trying to decarbonize at the moment, and so I think that's good. And then there's a lot other companies that are doing quite well with their employees and looking after them, but I think the whole social development goals is quite good because you can kind of, there's a lot of supply chain, like looking through your supply chain. There's a lot of things that are not good in companies' supply chain. I think we need to do a better job doing that and potentially not just look at your emissions. So there just needs to be a lot more resource, I think, allocated to business to work on these issues, and then we'll be able to do that. But it's very, you know, a lot of companies don't even want to employ a sustainability manager, so there needs to be resource there to do that, yeah.
In the accounting and finance space, have ideas such as degrowth got any traction?
As far as I'm aware, no. A lot of the bonus structures in organisations are all based on growth, so there would need to be other metrics that come into play to stop that from occurring. And people don't get that concept. It's like everyone always says, you know, like, talk about growth, like as you grow you get taller and taller or whatever. So I think it's just it is quite a different mindset doing that, but I follow Brownie West, and she has a Business But Better podcast, and that's an amazing podcast to listen to. So I try and listen to that a bit behind, like, because she does it once every fortnight, so I'm just catching up to her. So I probably listen to one a week, so it's really good. And she talks about how different industries can do better, which is really good, like starting from a business. If you're not going to be sustainable, then you shouldn't be in business, basically.
Are we mature enough to be having conversations about getting past a business model that's essentially sell more stuff?
We're definitely mature enough, yeah. I think we are. Like, it's pretty horrible to see the amount of stuff that we consume. It's just ridiculous. Yeah, like going to Kmart, how many things that you can buy. So I think, yeah, like I, for example, haven't bought any clothes for this whole year, and that was something that I was easily able to do. So it's just those little patterns that people, like if everyone just did a little bit well, then we would be in a lot better situation. But it's just having that sort of discussion and committing to that behaviour change.
What is the biggest challenge or opportunity that you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
Looking forward to finishing my master's. So I'm working on my project at the moment, which is looking at landfill waste and trying to divert that from landfill. So that's probably would be my biggest thing, is getting through my master's so that then I can use that time that I'm spending on my master's to then focus on sustainability initiatives at my company.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Just go and do some research around what's happening in the sustainability space. The United Nations Sustainability Development Goals are a really good place to start, just to get you thinking around all the issues that are currently present. And I think our last assignment around the world is awful. The world is getting better. Sorry, I can't quite quote you, Maweta, but I think that was quite good for me because I felt like it was quite a negative space to be in because everything's so bad. So you have to try and focus on the good that is the good that we're doing in the world, and not just on the negative, because otherwise you'll just have no hope. So I think that's quite important as well if you are in the sustainability workspace.
Thank you for that. Maweta.
Hey, it has been a joy to share a learning space with you. And one of the things I've really appreciated is how willing you are to draw on your real life experience to support others in that co-learning space. I think that your employer is very lucky to have you, and your daughter is very lucky to have you. And I look forward to seeing where the future takes you, because, yeah, you're on a really good path and you have a lot to give. Thank you very much for sharing with us today.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks,
Maweta. Thanks, Sam.
We are going out to Luden Wainwright's daughter.
Oh, nice. Daughter.
Everything she sees, she says she wants. Everything she wants, I see she gets. That's my daughter in the water. Everything she owns, I bought her. Everything she owns. That's my daughter in the water. Everything she knows, I taught her. Everything she knows. I say she takes to heart. Everything she takes apart. That's my daughter in the water. Every time she fell, I caught her. Every time she fell. And that's my daughter in the water. Every time I fought her, yeah, I lost every time.
could strike somebody blind. Every sound she thinks blows her tiny mind. That's my daughter in the water.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. We broadcast every Wednesday afternoon at 3 on Otago Access Radio and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. We were joined today by Kate Parker as part of our Coming Up for Air series. With Mawira Karatai, I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Matua.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.